as I glared down at them. She was right. Marks was right. Jackson was right. Not only was I in no position to experiment with my commitment phobia, but also, Thomas was definitely not the guy to try it with. I stood and made my way to Constance's desk. Unsure if I was breathless or just nervous, I asked to see Special Agent Maddox. "He's in his office," Constance said without checking her earpiece. "Go right in." "Thank you," I said, breezing past her. "Hey," Thomas said, standing and smiling the moment he recognized who was barging in. "I can't do this. The date. I'm sorry." Thomas's guard instantly flew up, and I hated myself for it.
"Did you change your mind about Jackson?" he asked.
"No, no. I'm not sure I feel any different about relationships than I did when I left Chicago, and I don't think it's fair to you to try." Thomas's shoulders relaxed.
"That's it? That's your spiel?"
"Huh?"
"Unless you can look me in the eye right now and tell me you didn't like it when I kissed you this morning, I'm not buying it."
That wasn't the response I'd expected. "You've had your heart broken. I just broke someone's heart." Thomas shrugged.
"He wasn't right for you."
He walked around his desk and toward me. I took several slow, small steps backward until my backside was touching the massive conference table. Thomas leaned in, just inches from my face. I recoiled. "We have an assignment next week, sir. We should probably focus on a game plan." He closed his eyes and inhaled through his nose.
"Please stop calling me sir."
"Why does it bother you so much now?"
"It doesn't bother me."
He shook his head, scanning over my face with such longing I couldn't move.
"Our assignment is to pose as a couple."
His minty breath was warm on my cheek. The need to turn and feel his mouth on mine was so urgent that my chest ached.
"Since when did you start calling me sir again?"
I looked up at him. "Since now. The attraction is obvious, but..."
"That's an understatement. Do you have any idea how hard it is for me to see you walking around the office in a skirt, knowing you never wear panties?"
I puffed out of breath. "There is something between us, I'm aware. We slept together less than 20 minutes after we'd met, for Christ's sake. But I'm trying to do you a favor. Do you hear me? I want this to be very clear. I like you. A lot. I admit it. But I suck at relationships. More importantly, I don't want you to get hurt again, and neither do your friends." Thomas smirked.
"You've been talking to Marks, haven't you?"
"I'm also trying to spare us the squad room theatrics that we both know will come if this doesn't work out."
"Are you saying I'm dramatic?"
"Temperamental," I clarified. "And I can't follow through. We were doomed from the start."
"You stayed with Jackson for how many years after you had known you didn't want to marry him?"
"Too many," I said, ashamed. Thomas watched me for a moment, analyzing me. I hated that feeling. The power and control that came with being on the other side was much more preferable.
"You're scared," he said.
His words were gentle, understanding. "Aren't you?" I asked, looking up, straight into his beautiful, hazel eyes. He bent down and kissed the corner of my mouth, lingering there for a while, savoring it.
"What are you scared of?"
he whispered, cupping my elbows. "The truth?" He nodded, his eyes closed, his nose tracing my jaw. "In a few days, you're going to see Camille, and you'll be heartbroken. I won't like it, and neither will the office."
"You think I'm going to get hurt and start being an angry asshole again?"
"Yes."
"You're wrong. I'm not going to lie, it won't be fun. I'm not going to enjoy it, but I don't know. Things don't seem as hopeless as they did before."
He intertwined his fingers with mine and squeezed. He looked so relieved, so happy to be saying these things out loud. He didn't seem to be nervous or afraid at all.
And you're right. We need to focus and finish this assignment to ensure that Trav gets out of trouble. By then, maybe you can let go of this ridiculous notion that you can't be successful at both your career and a relationship. And once we've both got a clear conscience, you can decide if we're going on that date or not.
I frowned. He chuckled, touching his thumb to my chin.
What now?
I'm not sure. Something's not right. You're too okay about this.
Talk to Val. Ask her if I'm lying.
She doesn't work like that.
Yes, she does. Ask her.
I opened my mouth to speak, but he pressed my lips closed with his thumb.
Ask her.
I leaned away. Fine. Have a good day, sir.
Don't call me, sir. I want you out of the habit before we go to the ceremony.
Agent Maddox, I said, before walking quickly from his office.
I don't like that either, he called after me.
A wide grin spread across my face. I looked over at Constance as I passed, and she was smiling too. Chapter 13. Val held the wine glass to her lips. Her legs were stretched out across my couch in her charcoal gray lounge pants, and she had on a light blue t-shirt that read, "Well, the patriarch isn't going to fuck itself." "It's been over 3 weeks," she said, her thoughts as deep as they could be while floating in wine. She held the corkscrew like a weapon between her fingers, but then she crossed her legs like a lady. "What's your point?" I asked. "He's just so... I don't want to say he's in love, it's a little premature for that, but he's so... in love." "You're absurd."
"What about you?" she asked.
"I like him," I said, after a little thought. "A lot." There was no point in lying to Val.
What is that like, to actually like Thomas Maddox? I've hated him for so long that it's so foreign. To me, he's not really human.
Maybe that's what I like.
Lie.
I meant that he does have a human side, and I like that I'm the only one he allows to see it. It's sort of our secret. Something he keeps just for me. She swirled the wine around in her glass and then tipped it back against her mouth, swallowing the last bit.
Oh, be careful. That sounds dangerously like you're in it to win it, sunshine.
You're right. I take it back.
Well, on that depressing note, the wine is gone, so I'm gone.
I feel used.
But you enjoyed it, she winked. See you in the morning.
You want me to walk you?
I'm on the next block, she said, her drunken look of disapproval not at all intimidating.
What is that like? I asked.
Living in the same building as Sawyer? I used to like it.
She picked up the empty bottle and carried it to the kitchen counter.
But that didn't last long. Now I just ignore him.
Why does everyone detest him so much?
You'll learn, she said.
I frowned. Why does it have to be such a secret? Why can't you just tell me?
Trust me when I say that being told he's a bastard doesn't help. You have to experience it for yourself.
I shrugged. And Marx? Doesn't he live there too?
He lives downtown.
I don't know what to think about him, I said, standing. I think he hates me.
Marx and Maddox have a bromance. It's gross.
She walked with an astonishing amount of balance for being a bottle and a half in. I laughed.
I'm going to bed. All right. Good night, geese with an L.
She showed herself out, and I heard the elevator ding. Already in drinking wine at home clothes, I fell onto my mattress, face down on top of my yellow and gray comforter. My ears perked up when a knocking noise broke the silence. At first, I thought it was someone down the hall, but then it was louder. Val, I called, annoyed that I had to stand again. I walked across the kitchen and living room to open the door. You should have just stayed. My voice pinched off when I recognized Jackson standing in the doorway, looking desperate and drunk.
Lise.
Jesus Christ, Jackson, what are you doing here?
I went to the Top Gun bar like you said, got drunk. There are some hot, hot He squinted his eyes. Women in this town.
His face fell.
It made me miss you even more, he whined, trudging past me into the living room. My entire body tensed. He wasn't part of my new life, and it made me nearly frantic to have Jackson standing in my new, Jackson-free condo. You can't be here, I began.
I don't want to do those things without you, he slurred. I want to experience San Diego with you. Maybe if I transferred here, too?
Jackson, you're drunk. You barely listen to me when you're sober. Let's call you a cab. I walked toward my phone, but Jackson got to it before I could, and he tossed it across the room. It skidded across the floor and slammed against the baseboard. What the hell is wrong with you? I yelled before quickly covering my mouth. I scurried over to retrieve my phone from the floor. It was lying on its face next to the baseboard it had collided with. I inspected it to make sure it wasn't damaged. Miraculously, it wasn't cracked or even dinged.
I'm sorry, Jackson yelled back, leaning forward and holding up his hands. Don't call a cab, Lisi.
He intermittently swayed from side to side to keep his balance. I couldn't remember ever seeing him so intoxicated.
I'll just sleep here with you.
No, I said, my tone firm. You're not staying here.
Lise, he said, walking toward me, his round eyes half closed and glossed over.
He wasn't even looking at me, but past me, weaving back and forth. He took my shoulders in his hands and leaned in, his lips puckered and his eyes closed. I dodged, and we both tumbled to the floor.
Damn it, Jackson!
I scrambled up, and I watched him struggle to get his bearings. Reaching up and rocking to sit up, he looked like a turtle on its shell. I groaned. He climbed to his knees and began to blubber.
Oh, no. Oh, please. Please stop, I said, holding out my hands.
I helped him up and then began to dial the number for a cab. Jackson swatted my phone from my hands, and again, it crashed to the floor. I let go of his arm, letting him fall, hard. That's it. I've tried to be nice. Get out.
You can't just kick me out of your life, Lise. I love you.
He slowly climbed to stand. I covered my eyes.
You are going to be so embarrassed tomorrow.
No, I'm not. He grabbed my shoulders and shook me. What's it going to take for you to hear me? I can't just let you go. You're the love of my life.
You're not giving me a choice, I said, grabbing hold of his fingers and bending them backward. He cried out, more from shock than pain. That move might have worked on any other drunken idiot, but not FBI SWAT. Even drunk, Jackson quickly maneuvered from my grasp and was grabbing at me again. The door blew open, the knob banging into the wall. One minute I was in Jackson's grasp, and the next, Jackson was in someone else's.
What the fuck are you doing? Thomas said, holding Jackson's back against the wall with a murderous glare.
He had two fistfuls of Jackson's shirt. Jackson heaved Thomas away and swung, but Thomas ducked and then pushed Jackson right back against the wall, holding him there by using his forearm like a bar across his throat.
Don't fucking move, Thomas said, his voice low and menacing.
Jackson, do as he says, I warned.
What are you doing here? Jackson asked.
He looked to me.
Does he live here? Are you living together?
I rolled my eyes.
Jesus.
Thomas glanced over his shoulder at me.
I'm going to take him down and put him in a cab. What hotel is he at?
I have no idea. Jackson? Jackson's eyes were closed, and he was breathing deep, his knees sagging beneath him. Jackson, I said loudly, poking at his shoulder. Where are you staying? When he didn't answer, my shoulders fell. We can't put him in a cab while he's passed out.
He's not staying here, Thomas said, a tinge of anger still in his voice.
I don't see another option. Thomas leaned over, letting Jackson fall forward over his shoulder, then carried him to the couch. More careful than I thought he would be, Thomas helped Jackson lie back and then tossed a throw over him.
Come on, he said.
taking my hand. What? I asked, with just a bit of resistance as he pulled me toward the door.
You're staying with me tonight. I have an important meeting in the morning, and I won't be able to sleep, worrying that he's going to wake up and wander into your bed.
I pulled my hand back. I would hate for you not to be at your best during your meeting. Thomas sighed.
Cut me some slack. It's late.
I raised an eyebrow. He looked away, annoyed, and then back at me.
I admit it. I don't want him fucking touching you.
He was enraged at the thought, and then it seemed to melt away. He took a step toward me, tenderly gripping my hips.
Can't you see through my bullshit by now? Can't we just, I don't know, say what we think or feel? I thought I was, Thomas said. Your turn.
I picked at my nails. You were right. I'm scared. I'm afraid I can't do this even if I want to.
And I'm not sure you can either.
He pressed his lips together in a hard line, amused.
Get your keys.
I took the few steps to my phone and bent down to retrieve it, and then walked to the counter and swiped the keys up with one hand, my purse with the other. As I slid on my slippers, I couldn't help but glance back once more to Jackson. His limbs were splayed out in every direction. His mouth was open, and he was snoring.
He'll be fine, Thomas said, holding out his hand for me.
I joined him in the hall, locking the door behind us. We passed the elevator and climbed the stairs in silence. Once we arrived at his door, Thomas swung the door open and gestured for me to walk inside. Thomas flipped on the light, revealing a space so immaculate it didn't look lived in. Three magazines were fanned out on the coffee table, and a like-new couch sat against the wall. Everything was in its place, plants, magazines, and even pictures. It included everything that made up a home, but beneath the homey embellishments, it was too perfect, sterile, even. It was as if Thomas were trying to convince himself that he had a life outside of the bureau. I walked over to a console table next to the flat screen on the opposite side of the room. Three silver frames held black and white photos. One, I assumed, were his parents. Another showed Thomas with his brothers, and I was amazed at how much the younger four looked alike. Then there was one of Thomas and a woman. Her beauty was distinctive, seeming to be wild and effortless. Her razor-cut short hair and cleavage-bearing tight shirt surprised me. She wasn't who I'd thought would be Thomas's type at all. Her thick eyeliner and smoky eyes were that much more prominent in grayscale. Thomas held her like she was precious to him, and I felt a lump form in my throat. "Is she Camille?" I asked.
"Yes," he said, his voice tinged with disgrace. "I'm sorry. I'm rarely home. I forget it's there."
My chest ached. The picture in that frame was the only answer I needed. Despite my efforts, I was falling for Thomas, but he was still in love with Camille. Even in a perfect world where two people who were obsessed with their jobs could make a relationship work, we had the added obstacle of unrequited love. At the moment, it was Thomas's problem, but if I allowed myself to have deeper feelings, it would be mine. I was always a firm believer that a person couldn't love two people at the same time. If Thomas still loves Camille, what does that mean for me? An obnoxious siren went off in my head so loud I could barely think. These feelings for Thomas, Agent Maddox, my boss, needed to stop now. I glanced at his couch as I worried that I would one day be begging him to love me in return, showing up drunk and emotional at his door before passing out on his couch like Jackson was on mine. "If you don't mind, I'll just make a pallet on the floor. The couch doesn't look that comfortable."
He chuckled. "Taylor said the same thing. You're welcome to the bed."
"I think, given our history, that is a particularly bad idea," I said, quoting him from before.
"What do you plan to do when we go to St. Thomas?" he asked.
"It will be your turn to take the floor." I tried to keep the hurt out of my voice.
Thomas left me for his bedroom and then came out with a pillow and a tightly rolled sleeping bag. I eyed his hall.
"Do you keep that in case of sleepovers?"
Camping, he said.
You've never been?
Not since running water became a thing.
The bed is all yours,
he said, ignoring my jab.
I just put on fresh sheets this evening.
Thank you, I said, passing him. I'm sorry we woke you.
I wasn't asleep. I have to admit that it was startling to hear a man yelling in your living room.
I apologize. Thomas dismissively waved his hand and then walked over to turn out the light.
Stop apologizing for him. I was out the door before I had time to think.
Thank you. I put my hand on the door jamb. Get some sleep. I don't want you to be mad at me if you can't concentrate during your meeting.
There is only one reason I wouldn't be able to concentrate during my meeting, and sleep, isn't it?
Enlighten me.
We're going to be spending the better part of the weekend together, and I have to talk my brother into something he won't want to do. Sunday is important, Lise, and you're the biggest distraction in my life at the moment.
My cheeks flushed, and I was thankful the lights were dim. I'll try not to be.
I don't think you can help being a distraction any more than I can help thinking about you.
I understand now why you said being friends would be a bad idea. Thomas nodded.
I said that 3 weeks ago, Lise. The situation has changed.
Not really.
We're more than friends now, and you know it.
I looked over at the picture of Thomas and Camille and pointed to it. She is what scares me, and she is what won't go away. Thomas walked over to the picture and set it down on its face.
It's just a picture.
The words I wanted to say caught in my throat. He took a step toward me. I pushed away from the door jamb, holding a hand out. We have a job to do. Let's focus on that. He couldn't hide his disappointment.
Good night.
Chapter 14. Thomas tossed a thick stack of papers onto my desk, his jaw dancing under his skin. He paced back and forth, breathing through his nose. What is this?
Read it,
he growled. Just as I opened the file folder, Val rushed in, stopping abruptly between the door and Thomas.
I just heard the news.
I frowned and skimmed over the words. The Office of the Inspector General, I said, looking up.
Shit,
Val said. Shit. The report was titled, A Review of the FBI's Handling and Oversight of Agent Aristotle Grove. I looked up at Thomas.
What did you do?
Val closed the door and approached my desk.
Grove is downstairs. Will they arrest him today? It's likely, Thomas said, still fuming.
I thought you took care of this, I said, closing the file and pushing it forward.
Took care of it?
Thomas said, his eyebrows shooting toward his hairline. I leaned forward, keeping my voice low. I told you Grove was feeding you bad intel. You sat on it too long.
I was compiling evidence against him. That was part of the reason I brought you here. Val was in on it, too.
I looked to my friend, who stared at the file as if it were on fire. She was biting her lip.
I didn't have to speak Japanese to know he was full of shit, she said.
Wait. Are you the language specialist he brought in on this? I nodded. Thomas pointed at her.
That's confidential, Tabor.
Val nodded, but she seemed uncomfortable that she hadn't sniffed that one out. Sawyer blew in, straightening his tie just as the door closed behind him.
I came as soon as I heard. What can I do? He asked.
Val shrugged.
What you do best.
Sawyer seemed disappointed.
Seriously? Again? He is my least favorite target. You know, if we took a blacklight to Grove's bedroom, every inch would be glowing.
Val covered her mouth, disgusted. I stood pressing my fists down on my desk. Would someone mind explaining what the hell everyone is talking about?
We have to be extremely careful with how we proceed,
Thomas said.
Travis could be in real trouble if this isn't seamless.
Val sat in the club chair, defeated. When Maddox transferred to HQ in Washington before he was promoted to ASAC, he caught a lead on one of Benny's goons from an agent working in HQ's Asian Criminal Enterprise Unit. I looked to Thomas, dubious. You caught a lead on one of your Italian mob bosses in Vegas from the Asian Crime Unit in Washington?
Thomas shrugged.
I'd call it luck, but I've worked on this case day and night since it landed on my desk. There isn't a fingerprint I haven't checked or a backlog I haven't accessed.
Val sighed, impatient.
You can call it bad luck. The goon was a kid. His name was David Kenji. Travis beat him unconscious one night in Vegas to protect Abby.
That's not in Travis's file, I said, looking to Thomas. He looked away, allowing Val to continue. Val nodded. That was intentionally kept out so it wouldn't throw up any red flags for Grove. He can't know anything about Travis. If he passes on the plan to any Yakuza, Travis is no longer an asset to the Bureau.
Why would Grove pass on info about Travis's recruitment to any Yakuza? I asked.
Val sat forward. David is the son of Yoshio Taru's sister.
Taru as in the second in command of Goto Gumi in Japan? I said, in disbelief.
Goto Gumi was one of the oldest syndicates of the original Yakuza Japanese gang. Taru was a prominent boss, leading Goto Gumi since the 1970s. Taru didn't just intimidate his enemies. He was creative with his executions, leaving their mutilated bodies for all to see.
Val nodded.
Taru's sister lived with him until she died when David was 14.
I nodded.
Okay, so you're telling me Travis is also a target of Yakuza?
Thomas shook his head.
I frowned.
I'm not hearing why there's a goddamn Inspector General's report on my desk.
Taru is bad news, Lise,
Thomas said.
Grove has been passing him information via the Yakuza he's interviewed here, and more recently he's been speaking to Taru directly. That's why we've had no traction on their criminal activity despite all the interviews. They've been one step ahead.
So we let the IG arrest Grove. Who cares? I asked. Thomas's face fell.
It gets worse. David died a couple of months ago. He was beaten unconscious during a fight, and no one has seen him since.
Does Taru think it was Travis? I asked.
Keep in mind, Sawyer chimed in. David's run-in with Travis was over a year ago, and to their knowledge, Travis hasn't been to Vegas since.
The fights were run by the mob, Val said. Benny pitted David against someone out for blood. Uncle Taru blamed Benny and sent several of his guys over to the States to get an explanation from Benny. The fighter who killed David was found all over the desert. Well, not all of him. We have reason to believe the men Taru sent over are part of this Yakuza nest we've been interviewing.
I frowned, still confused.
Why was the nephew of Taru doing low-level goon work for Benny?
The mother, Val said simply, as if I should have known.
When his mother died, David blamed Taru. There was a fight. David left and came to the States. He gravitated toward what he knew and ended up with Benny.
This is a train wreck, I said.
Val looked up to Thomas and then back at me.
We were waiting to pull the trigger on Grove because we knew he was playing both sides, but now that we've cracked the connection with Benny, we don't know what intel from our case he's turned over to them.
Shit, I said. How much does he know? Thomas took a step toward me.
Like I said, I've been suspicious of him for a while. Sawyer has been keeping track of his activities.
What kind of activities? I asked.
Sawyer crossed his arms.
Daily activities. What he eats, where he sleeps. I know what gives him indigestion, what soap he uses, and what porn sites he jacks off to.
Thanks for that, I said. Sawyer chuckled.
Surveillance, boss. I'm damn good at surveillance. Like the master, Val said.
Sawyer smiled at her.
Thanks.
Val rolled her eyes.
Fuck off.
Sawyer continued.
Maddox kept Grove in the dark about the Vegas case for the most part, but when the cases began to intertwine, Grove became interested, and so did Taru. Benny is smoothing things over with Taru, and with these guys, money can turn enemies into friends. The fights are big money. Benny wants a champion, and Travis is a sure thing.
Val sat back in the chair.
We can control what Grove learns at the Bureau, but if Benny or Taru mention Travis Maddox to Grove, it's all over. He'll make the connection.
I sighed. Travis's deal. Even Abby's access. Thomas nodded.
The case. All of it. We'll have to turn in what we've got and wrap it up without Travis or Abby.
And Travis will no longer be an asset to the Bureau. He'll go to prison, The weight of my words seemed to bear down on Thomas, and he used the bookshelf for support. I looked at the file lying askew halfway between Val and me. The Inspector General just blew us out of the water. Sawyer shook his head.
Grove doesn't know yet. We need to get on the phone, delay his arrest, and drag this out just a little longer.
You should have told us your contact was Lise, Val scolded. We could have avoided this.
Thomas glared at her, but she didn't yield.
How? He asked. Telling you that Lise was keeping tabs on Grove was going to keep the IG's office from writing that report? Are you fucking joking?
Knowing we could use Lise to check Grove's transcripts would have been helpful, Sawyer said.
I was having Lise check them, Sawyer,
Thomas said, annoyed.
You think she's been listening to Taylor Swift on her headphones in there?
I shook my head. Why the secrecy?
Thomas held out his hands and let them fall to his sides.
It's spy 101, kids. The fewer people you tell, the less risk you take. I didn't want Grove to know I had another Japanese translator in the unit. He needed to keep tabs on all the interviews for Teru, and another Japanese-speaking agent could have gotten in the way. She might have ended up a target just to keep Grove in charge of the Yakuza interrogations.
Oh, Val said. You needed to protect her. Sawyer rolled his eyes.
That's absurd. He didn't even know her to want to protect her.
It took him a moment, but when Sawyer recognized the shame in my eyes, his mouth fell open. His index finger waggled between Thomas and me.
You two were...
I shook my head. It was before. He didn't know I was here to work at the Bureau.
Discussing line of work comes right after name swapping, Sawyer cackled. You one-nighted the new hire, Maddox? No wonder you jumped on her ass at our first meeting. You don't like surprises. This is all beginning to make sense. We don't have time for this,
Thomas sneered. Sawyer stopped laughing.
Is that why you gave her the promotion?
The small smile on Val's lips vanished. Oh, shit. Thomas lunged for Sawyer, and Val and I stood between them, bouncing like pinballs as we pushed them apart.
All right, I'm sorry, Sawyer yelled.
A little fucking decorum, please, I yelled.
We're grown adults, at work.
Thomas stepped back, and Sawyer smoothed his tie and then sat down.
Grow up, I snarled at Thomas.
Thomas touched his fingers to his mouth while he calmed down.
My apologies, he said through his teeth. I'll call Polanski. We need to get that report buried and intercept the warrant for Grove's arrest. At least for now.
Val straightened her clothes.
You call the SAC. I'll call the IG's office. I'll tell Grove. See if he suspects anything, Sawyer said.
Thomas's expression turned severe.
We have to keep a tight lid on this.
Understood,
Sawyer and Val said. They left Thomas and me alone in my office, and we stared at one another. You left out your key agents to protect me? I asked.
Marks knew.
I tilted my head. Marks isn't even on this case. Thomas shrugged.
I can trust him.
You can trust Val, too.
Val talks too much.
We can still trust her. Thomas gritted his teeth.
I shouldn't have to explain myself. It's dangerous, Lise. These people we're dealing with, if they get a hold of your name.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, I snapped. Thomas blinked, surprised at my reaction. I can shoot a target at 85 yards with a 22 pistol. I can take down an assailant twice my size, and I deal with your arrogant ass at least twice a day. I can handle Benny, the Yakuza, and Grove. I'm not Camille. I'm an agent of the FBI, same as you, and you will respect me as such. Do you understand me? Thomas swallowed, carefully thinking about his next answer.
I don't think you're weak, Lise.
Then why?
Something happened to me when I met you.
We had great sex. You're attracted to me. That doesn't mean you shut out your best agents.
That's another reason it's a bad idea for us to explore whatever this is, I said, gesturing in the air between us. No, it's more than that. From the very beginning, I knew.
You knew what?
I snapped. That I would have to be careful.
I lost someone I loved before, and it changed me. I gave up someone I loved before, and it crushed me. I know that when you leave, Lise, however it goes down, it will end me.
I closed my open mouth and stuttered out the next words. What makes you think I'm going anywhere?
Isn't that what you do? Run? Isn't that your whole goal in life, to move on?
That's not fair.
I'm not just talking about promotions, Lise. We are poking not one, but two deadly mafia rings. They don't know we're on to Grove. If Grove finds out that you speak the language and can out him, they will see you as a problem. You know how these people are. They're really good at erasing problems.
But Grove doesn't know, and Val or Sawyer wouldn't have told him.
I wasn't going to chance it, he said, sitting in the chair Val had previously occupied.
So now we have two problems. He's going to notice when your brother starts working for the FBI. If you want this to work with Travis, we have to get rid of Grove.
And we can't get rid of Grove without Taru knowing we're on to him and Benny. The case will implode.
I stood there at a complete loss. What are we going to do?
We're going to stall. The timing has to be perfect.
So we don't just have to pull off one miracle, but two.
You have to be careful, Lise.
Don't start. We have to focus.
God damn it. I'm more focused than I've been in a long time. When I walked into that squad room and saw you sitting there, I admit it, okay? Knowing I brought you in to expose Grove scared the shit out of me, and it still does. It has nothing to do with you needing protection or you being a female agent and everything to do with the fact that at any moment you could have a target on your back and it'd be my fucking fault, he yelled the last part, the veins in his neck bulging.
It's the job, Thomas. It's what we do.
Thomas picked up the file and tossed it across the room. Papers exploded in every direction before floating down to the floor. You're not listening to what I'm saying. This is serious.
He leaned down, his palms flat on my desk.
These people will kill you, Lise. They won't think twice about it.
I forced my shoulders to relax. We're leaving for Eakins on Saturday and attending a ceremony in the Virgin Islands on Sunday, and we have to persuade your brother to lie to his wife for the rest of his life before we leave Monday morning because our boss wants an answer. Let's concentrate on that first.
Thomas's face fell, defeated. Just stay away from Agent Grove. You're not the best liar.
Yet you trust me to convince your family that we're a couple all weekend?
I know what it feels like to have you wrapped up in my arms, he said. I trust that.
He closed the door behind him, and after several moments, I finally let out the breath I hadn't known I was holding. Chapter 15.
Let me carry that,
Thomas said, sliding my leather tote off my shoulder and onto his. No, I've got it.
Lise, girlfriends like this stuff. You need to get your head on straight. Stop being an agent and start playing the part.
I nodded, unhappily conceding. We had just arrived at San Diego International Airport. I was glad we could breeze through the business class line. On the final Saturday of spring break, the airport was particularly crowded. Dodging the human traffic on the way to our gate was making an already tense Thomas even more anxious.
I'm not looking forward to doing this again in the morning or again on Monday morning, Thomas grumbled.
Noticing women taking second and third glances at Thomas made it hard not to stare at him myself. He was wearing a somewhat tight gray t-shirt with a navy sport coat and jeans, his brown leather belt matching his Timberlands. When I got close enough, I could smell his cologne and found myself breathing deeper. He hid his eyes behind a pair of aviator sunglasses and kept a forced smile despite being loaded down with our luggage and the knowledge that he would see his family and Camille soon. We sat in the terminal, and Thomas situated our bags around him. He'd only brought a carry-on. The rest was my medium-sized roller luggage, a roller carry-on, and a leather tote.
"What do you have in this thing?"
he asked, slowly lowering the leather tote to the floor. My laptop, creds, keys, snacks, headset, wallet, a sweater, gum.
Did you pack a coat?
We'll be in Illinois for one night, and then we're off to the Virgin Islands. I can make it for that long with a sweater, unless the bachelor party is outside.
I'm not sure you're going to the bachelor party.
Trent is proposing to Camille at the bachelor party, right?
Seems that way, he said,
his voice suddenly quiet. If she can go, I can go.
She's a bartender.
I'm an FBI agent. I win. Thomas stared at me.
I mean that she might be working the party.
So will I.
I doubt other females will be there.
I'm okay with that, I said. Look, I'm not leaving you to witness that alone. I'm not even in love with Jackson, and I can't imagine how awkward I would feel being present while he proposed.
How did the next morning go? You never said.
He was gone. I called his mom, and she said that he got home okay. We haven't spoken. Thomas laughed once.
Showed up at your place begging. What a vagina full of sand.
Focus. We won't have time to drop me off. We'll have to go straight there, and I'm not waiting in the car. Just tell your brothers we go everywhere together. Tell them that I'm an overbearing, jealous girlfriend. Honestly, I don't care. But if you wanted background decoration, you should have brought Constance. Thomas smiled.
I wouldn't have brought Constance. She's very nearly engaged to the SAC's son.
Really? I asked, surprised.
Really?
Another boat you missed while pouting over Camille. Thomas made a face.
Constance isn't my type.
Yes, because beautiful, smart, and blonde is so icky, I deadpanned.
Not all men are into sweet and loyal.
You're not? I said, dubious. He looked down at me, amused.
My type seems to be feisty women who are emotionally unavailable.
I glared at him. I'm not the one who's in love with someone else.
You're married to the Bureau, Lise. Everyone knows it.
Exactly what I've been trying to tell you. Relationships are a waste of time for people like us.
You think being in a relationship with me would be a waste of time?
I know it would. I wouldn't even come second. I would be third. He shook his head, confused.
Third?
After the woman you're in love with. At first, Thomas seemed too insulted to argue, but then he leaned into my ear.
Some days you make me wish I'd never told you about Camille.
You didn't tell me about her, remember? It was Val.
You need to get over it.
I touched my chest. I need to get over it?
She's an ex-girlfriend. Stop being a brat.
I gritted my teeth, afraid of what would come out of my mouth next. You miss her. How am I supposed to feel about that? You still have a picture of her in your living room. Thomas's face fell.
Lise, come on. We can't do this now.
Can't do what? Fight over an ex-girlfriend? Because a real couple wouldn't do that. I crossed my arms and sat back against the seat. Thomas looked down, laughing once.
I can't argue with that.
We waited at the gate until the desk agent called business class for boarding. Thomas loaded up with our carry-ons and my tote, refusing to let me help. We slowly stepped forward in line, listening to the machine beep each time the ticket agent scanned a boarding pass. Once we were through, Thomas followed me down the jetway, and then we were stopped again near the door of the plane. I noticed the females staring, this time the flight attendants, looking past me to Thomas. He seemed unaware. Maybe he was just used to it at this point in his life. At the office, it was easy to pretend he wasn't beautiful, but out in the real world, the reactions of others reminded me of how I'd felt the first time I saw him. We settled in our seats, buckling in. I finally felt relaxed, but Thomas was on edge. I put my hand on his. I'm sorry.
It's not you, he said.
His words stung. Although unintentional, they had a deeper meaning. He was about to watch the woman he loved agree to marry someone else. And he was right. The woman he loved wasn't me. Try not to think about her, I said. Maybe we can step out before it happens. Get some air. He looked at me as if I should have known better.
You think I'm stressed about Trenton's proposal?
Well, I began,
but didn't quite know how to finish.
You should know the picture is gone, he said, matter-of-factly.
The picture of Camille? Gone where?
In a box full of memories, where it belongs.
I looked at him for the longest time, a twinge forming in my chest.
Are you happy?
He asked. I'm happy, I said, half ashamed, half bewildered. Holding back now would make me gratuitously stubborn. He had put her away. I had no excuse. I reached over and laced my fingers in his, and he brought my hand up to his mouth. He closed his eyes and then kissed my palm. Such a simple gesture was so intimate, like tugging at someone's clothes during a hug or the tiniest touch on the back of the neck. When he did things like that, it was easy to forget he'd ever thought of someone else. After the passengers settled into their seats and the flight attendants informed us how to survive a possible plane crash, the plane taxied to the end of the runway and then surged forward, the speed climbing and the fuselage rattling, until we took off in a quiet, smooth motion. Thomas began to fidget. He turned around and then faced forward. "What's wrong?" I asked.
"I can't do this," Thomas whispered.
He looked over at me.
"I can't do this to him."
I kept my voice low. "You're not doing anything to him. You're the messenger." He looked up at the vent above his head and reached up, turning the knob until air was blowing full blast in his face. He settled back into his seat, looking miserable. "Thomas, think about it. What other option does he have?" He clenched his teeth as he always did when he was annoyed.
"You keep saying I'm protecting him, but if I hadn't told my director about Travis and Abby, he wouldn't have to choose."
"That's true. Prison would be his only choice." Thomas looked away from me and out the window. The sun reflected off the sea of white clouds, making him squint. He closed the shutter, and it took my eyes a moment to adjust. "This is impossible," I said. "We have a job to do. And if we have all this personal junk swimming around in our heads, we're going to make a mistake, and this entire operation will go south. But its very nature is personal. This assignment involves your family. And we're here together with our own issues. If we don't figure out a way, Thomas, we're fucked. Even if, when Travis says yes, if you're not on your A-game, Grove is going to sniff this out."
"You're right."
"I'm sorry, what did you say?" I teased, touching my fingers to my ear. The flight attendant leaned in. "Can I get you a beverage?" "White wine, please," I said.
"Jack and Coke," Thomas said.
She nodded and stepped toward the row behind us, asking the same.
"I said, you're right,"
Thomas said begrudgingly. "Are you nervous about seeing Camille tonight?"
"Yes,"
he said, without hesitation.
"The last time I saw her, she was in the hospital, pretty banged up."
He noticed my surprised expression and continued.
"She and Trenton were driving just outside of Eakins when they were hit by a drunk driver."
"I can't decide if your family is really lucky or really accident-prone."
"Both."
The flight attendant brought our drinks, setting down napkins first and then our glasses. I took a sip of wine as Thomas watched. He paid special attention to my lips, and I wondered if he had the same jealous thoughts I did when his lips would touch things other than my mouth. Thomas broke his stare and looked down.
"I'm happy for Trent. He deserves it."
"And you don't?" He laughed nervously and then looked up at me.
"I don't want to talk about Camille."
"Okay. It's a long flight. Talk, nap, or read." The flight attendant returned with a notepad and pen. "Miss Lindy?"
"Yes."
She smiled, dozens of gray strands shooting out like lightning bolts from her French braid. "Would you like the grilled chicken with sweet chili sauce or our grilled salmon with lemon caper butter?" The chicken, please." "Mr. Maddox?"
"The chicken as well."
She scribbled on her notebook. "Everyone okay with beverages?" We both looked at our nearly full glasses and nodded. The attendant smiled. "Fantastic."
"Talk," Thomas said, leaning toward me.
"What?" He stifled a laugh.
"You asked, talk, nap, or read. I choose talk."
Oh, I smiled.
But I don't want to talk about Camille. I want to talk about you.
I wrinkled my nose. Why? I'm boring.
Have you ever broken a bone?
He asked. No.
Ever cried over a guy?
Nope.
How old were you when you lost your virginity?
You were my first. Thomas's eyes nearly popped out of his head.
What? But you were engaged.
I giggled.
I'm just kidding.
I was 20. College. Not anything or anyone to speak of.
Illegal drugs?
No.
Ever drank enough that you passed out?
No. Thomas thought for approximately 30 seconds. I told you, I said, a tad embarrassed. I'm boring. Then he asked his next question.
Have you ever slept with your boss?
He smirked. I shrank into my seat. Not on purpose.
He threw his head back and laughed.
It's not funny. I was mortified.
Me too, but not for the reason you think.
Because you were afraid of what Taru or Benny would do to me if Grove found out why I was there? Thomas frowned.
Yes.
He swallowed hard and then looked down at my lips.
That night with you, it changed everything. I was going to give it a few days so I wouldn't look completely pathetic when I knocked on your door. I came to work that morning and immediately told Marks that he was coming with me to Cutter's. I was hoping to run into you again.
I smiled. Yeah?
Yeah, he said,
looking away again.
I'm still concerned. I'm going to have to keep a close eye on you.
Darn, I teased. Thomas didn't seem happy about my response.
I'm not the one who keeps tabs on people, remember?
Sawyer? I asked. When Thomas affirmed my suspicion with a nod, I chuckled.
It's not funny, he said, unamused.
It's a little funny. No one will tell me why they dislike him except to say he's a bastard or an asshole. Neither you nor Val will give me anything specific. He helped me unpack. He was at my condo all night and didn't try to sleep with me. He's got the sleazy barfly thing going on, but he's harmless.
He's not harmless. He's married.
My mouth fell open. Excuse me?
You heard me.
No, it sounded like you said Agent Sawyer is married.
He is.
What?
Thomas was beyond annoyed, but I couldn't wrap my head around what he was telling me.
He leaned closer.
To Val.
What? My voice lowered an octave. Now I knew he was messing with me.
It's true. They were like Romeo and Juliet at first, and then it turned out that Sawyer has a small issue with commitment. Val has sent him divorce papers several times. He keeps dragging it out. They've been separated for almost 2 years.
My mouth was still hanging open. But they live in the same building.
No, he said, chuckling. They live in the same condo.
Shut the front door!
Different bedrooms. They're roommates.
Val makes me tell her everything. This is just... I feel betrayed. Is that rational?
I do. Yeah,
Thomas said, shifting in his seat.
She's definitely going to kill me.
I shook my head. I did not see that coming.
I'd ask you not to tell her that I told you, but when we get back, she'll take one look at you and know.
I turned to face him. How does she do that? He shrugged.
She's always had a bullshit detector, and then the FBI helped her hone her skill. With pupil dilation, delay of response, looking up and to the left, and whatever inner radar she has that goes off, she can detect more than just lies now. She detects omission, even if you've got news on your mind that you're keeping to yourself. Val knows all.
It's unsettling.
That's why you're her only friend.
My mouth pulled to one side and I cocked my head to the other. That's sad.
Not many people can handle Val's gift or her brazen use of it. That's why Sawyer's such a dick.
He cheated?
Yes.
Knowing she would find out?
I believe so.
So why won't he divorce her? I asked.
Because he can't find anyone better.
Oh, I hate him, I snarled.
Thomas pushed a button, and his seat began to recline. A satisfied smile stretched across his face.
No wonder she's never let me come over, I mused.
His grin became wider, and he wedged the pillow under his head.
Have you ever?
No, no more questions about me.
Why not?
There's literally nothing to speak of.
Tell me about what happened with you and Jackson. Why didn't it work out?
Because our relationship was nothing to speak of, I said, forming my lips over the words like he had to read my lips to understand.
Are you telling me your entire life was boring until you came to San Diego?
He asked, in disbelief. I didn't answer.
Well,
he said, shifting until he was comfortable.
Well, what?
Knowing you now, I'd almost believe you didn't have it in you to be so spontaneous. It makes sense. You left Cutters with me that night to have something to talk about.
Arrogance flickered in his eyes. Don't forget, Thomas. You don't know me that well.
I know you bite your thumbnail when you're nervous. I know you twist your hair around your finger when you're in deep thought. You drink Manhattans. You like Fuzzy's burgers. You hate milk. You're not particularly fussy about the cleanliness of your home. You can run farther than I can during our lunch hour, and you like weird Japanese art. You're patient, you give second chances, and you don't make hasty judgments about strangers. You're professional and highly intelligent, and you snore.
I do not, I sat straight up.
Thomas laughed. Okay, it's not snoring, you just breathe.
Everyone breathes, I said, defensive.
My apologies. I think it's cute.
I tried not to smile, but failed. I lived with Jackson for years, and he never said anything.
It's the tiniest wheeze, barely noticeable,
he said. I shot him a dirty look.
To be fair, Jackson was in love with you. He probably didn't tell you a lot of things.
Good thing you're not, so I can hear all the humiliating things about myself.
As far as everyone is concerned, I'm in love with you today and tomorrow.
His words made me pause.
Then play the part and pretend that you think I'm perfect.
I can't recall thinking otherwise.
Thomas didn't crack a smile. Oh, please, I said, rolling my eyes. Does my first FD-302 ring a bell?
You know why I did that. I'm not perfect, I grumbled, biting the corner of my thumbnail.
I don't want you to be. He scanned over my face with such affection that I felt like the only other person in the fuselage. He leaned toward me, his eyes fixated on my lips. I had just begun to close the gap when the flight attendant approached.
Would you open your tray table? She asked.
Thomas and I both blinked and then fiddled with the mechanics of getting the trays out of the arm of the seat. His popped out first, and then he helped me with mine. The attendant gave us a what-a-cute-couple look and then spread napkins on both of our trays before setting our meals before us.
More wine? She asked.
I looked at my half-empty glass. I hadn't even realized I'd been drinking it.
Yes, please.
She filled my glass and then returned to the other passengers. Thomas and I ate our meals in silence, but it was clear what we thought of our microwaved grilled chicken with a teaspoon of sweet chili sauce and limp mixed vegetables. The pretzel roll was the best part of the meal. The man sitting in the aisle seat in front of us kept his feet propped on the wall in front of him and talked to his neighbor about his burgeoning evangelical career. The silver-haired man behind us talked to the woman next to him about his first novel, and after asking some basic questions, she revealed that she was thinking of writing one, too. Before I was finished with my warm chocolate chip cookie, the pilot came over the PA system to announce that he would begin the descent soon and our flight would land in Chicago 10 minutes earlier than expected. Once he finished his announcement, a symphony of seatbelts unclicking and bodies shifting could be heard, and the pilgrimages to the restrooms began. Thomas closed his eyes again. I tried not to stare. Since we'd met, I had done nothing but deny my feelings for him while I fought ferociously for my independence. But I was free, only when he touched me. Outside of our intimate moments, I would be held captive by thoughts of his hands.
Even if it was just for appearances, I hoped that pretending would satisfy my curiosity.